podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Good evening and welcome back to another live episode of Red Tinted Glasses here on the Red Tinted Glasses YouTube channel for the final time of the 22-23 season. We are live and hopefully we'll put in a better performance than the Dons did at Parkhead at the weekend, Callum, because your Wi-Fi is probably as bad as we defended at times this season.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say, hopefully my Wi-Fi puts in a better performance after the last live was a bit of a problem. It seems to not be any better. It seems to have got considerably worse ever since my brother moved home and decided to soak up all the internet in the house. But, yeah, I'm glad I wasn't at football. I was at BBC Radio 1, big weekender. Royal Blood's performance, arguably worse than Aberdeen, however.
Yeah, definitely went down like a lead balloon. But we're not going to spend too much time looking back on the weekend's result, because you know it was a bit of a nothing game, but we will give our thoughts on it, and then a bit later on in the episode we'll take a look back at the season that was. Of course, a bit of a roller coaster, I think it's fair to say, but we'll review the season in terms of the league, the cup performances, and of course the managerial performances as well. And then share our hopes for next season. We'll do maybe a bit more in-depth into that over the course of the summer. And then take a look at our favourite and worst moments for the season as well. I think maybe one of those categories, it's fairly straightforward what the winner of that award is going to be. But no need to drag those segments out over a few episodes. But we'll certainly get into it. And there's lots of you joining on the live tonight, so I'm sure you'll be happy to share your thoughts on the season that's been. But Callum, as we said, we'll start with the game at the weekend. Despite being a dead rubber and obviously maybe some players suffering a little bit from the post-match celebrations of Wednesday night's victory over St Mirren, a performance like that from an Aberdeen team in any sort of game, in my opinion anyway, is absolutely unacceptable. To barely put in any sort of effort, no shots in the game, I mean, that when we went down to Parkhead under Barry Robson earlier in the season and got suitably brushed aside then as well, I don't even know if we had a handful of shots then. So once again, for me, another meek collapse against Celtic, which kind of really was a dampener on the end of the season after the bounce from Wednesday.
I think so, but I was watching this. I've seen the highlights since, but I was watching the scores as they were coming through. And my response was sort of, meh, oh well. Because, you know, the job was done by that point. And having seen certainly the goals back anyway, you sort of get that impression from some of the players as well. An absolute dead rubber. And you get the sense that they were definitely feeling the same way as us. I mean, still never nice to go down there and get an absolute doing, regardless, as you say. And, you know, it's not even register a shot. Never mind a shot on target, a shot at all. It doesn't make for good viewing. And I think also it was probably highlighted the drop-off we have when we don't have our best 11 available.
Yeah, but in saying that as well, and obviously Miovski missed out because of the injury, but we still went with a fairly strong starting 11 for that game, which was, you know, maybe took a few by surprise. I think it's fair to say that, well, certainly I was expecting to see a few changes wrong, maybe give some of those fringe players a bit of minutes before the end of the season just to maybe show what they could do, maybe put in more effort than some on show did. And I think as well, you know, no shots in a game that means nothing is quite concerning, because even then we've still struggled to have a go at a Celtic team that finally decided to put in a performance after a few weeks of chucking points left, right and centre. But hopefully that's fit and raring to go. Maybe Kyogo's a bit of a doubt for the upcoming weekend Scottish Cup final, because, boy, do we need them to do us a favour this weekend.
Oh, we absolutely do. And one of my main things going into this game was, let's just not injure any of their key men and make sure they're fit and healthy. And also I said give them a competitive game, which we didn't do. Maybe they're fit and healthy going to the Scottish Cup final so they could do us a favour. So that wasn't the case, but it was drab, and you know, they were all buzzing with their celebrations and all that going on. But we just looked like we were already on the beach. That's sort of the sense I get. And, you know, after the shift they have put in over recent weeks, fair enough to a degree. But I do agree in, when you say, you know, maybe we could have had a bit of a go in a game that doesn't matter. It might have been nice to see what would have happened if we'd just gone hell for leather, gung-ho, 4-4-4-2-4, Jimmy Calderwood style, and try and play a bit of football. But nobody could be arsed, it would seem.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, a game that I didn't think I would care about, I ended up caring a lot about. But I think for me, the manner of the way we conceded the goals in the game, it just always feels that whenever we go to Parkhead, especially, Celtic rarely have to work hard to score against us. And I know, again, you make the point about the players were potentially on the beach, but again, that shouldn't be acceptable. I know there was a small allocation down there, but what sort of performance does that give to those that travelled from the northeast down to that game? They should have at least, you know, been merited with a somewhat worthy performance. I think, you know, justifying not going, and that was one of the comments that was coming in on the live as well, saying we seem to have an issue with Celtic over recent seasons. Is it worth attending the matches? And I think it's why a lot of people are maybe certainly away from home, put off attending the game, not to mention the terrible view that you get as well. But as you said as well, Callum, look, the job was done on the Wednesday night. It meant that we could enjoy the game in terms of no pressure on it, but I didn't enjoy watching it. It's safe to say. I think you definitely had the better of the weekend, being a big weekend.
I did. I came back sunburnt after being in Dundee for 2 days. So that was an experience.
To be fair, I just sat outside for 20 minutes and I'm sunburnt, let alone 2 days in Dundee.
That's true. I got away with it a little bit. I had to buy... it was meant to be cold on a Sunday, so I wore jeans, and then after about 10 minutes, I had to go and buy shorts. So that was good. Just a complaint, if anyone from the BBC is tuning in. Big weekend in Dundee, and I think I can count... there was 3 Scottish acts that I was aware of. What's that about? That's my main gripe from the weekend.
Oh, well, if that's your biggest gripe from the weekend, then you're doing well. But I think, you know, from the weekend as well, I think Barry Robson's probably learned a lot from that squad and has probably given him a lot of food for thought going into this summer, in terms of knowing that, as you alluded to earlier, the fact that, you know, when we don't have our best 11 out, we are a considerably weaker side. And there's been obviously a lot of debate on social media the last few days about the fact that we need to get strength and depth, and I think that's definitely been highlighted based on the weekend.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it might have, you mentioned earlier, it might have been better to give fringe players a chance in that situation. Probably would have given us less of a chance of getting a result, but then you could have maybe seen who's ready to be, who deserves to be part of the squad next season, who's got what it takes in that sense. Or if there's players you're looking to sell, put them in the shop window perhaps, but... Not the case. You know, it was good to see Barry come out afterwards, at least saying, you know, I want us to be better. We lost 5-0, so I'd hope he would say that. But I'm just glad that it didn't come down to that game where it would have mattered. That's basically the only positive we can take.
Yeah, especially with Celtic deciding to turn up for the first time, really, it felt like, since the split fixtures announced. But we've given them that confidence boost going into the Scottish Cup, hopefully. Inverness, I saw Billy Dodd saying that they're eyeing a special performance this weekend. Hopefully that's all they're doing, is eyeing it and don't actually follow through and win it. It'd be quite typical, wouldn't it? But, of course, that drew to a conclusion, our league campaign. But, Callum, I think when we did that live back in January, when... definitely our most watched live ever. And we had over 400 people tuning in to us near enough crying after our Scottish Cup exit. If you turned around and said to me that we would finish third in the league and be, you know, looking forward to potentially group stage European football coming up, you know, from September onwards, I think folk would have said, how much did you have to drink tonight?
Absolutely. We would have thought they were mental and yet still would have snapped their hands off as well. The turnaround has been quite exceptional. I still, to be honest, can't believe this is the same season than that sort of weekend, January, 8 days, whatever, where we shipped 11 goals in the capital and lost to a junior side that are sponsored by a Peri Peri chicken shop. I'm the manager, actually, owns the Peri Peri chicken shop. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's left now. But that sort of sums up that week was just, I don't know. It's mental to think, like, the turnaround we've had since then. You would have thought, you know, there's no way we could have got worse than that week. However, I would never have imagined us being in this position now where we could be looking at 8 ties in Europe, depending on Celtic beating a championship side that didn't qualify for the playoffs.
Yeah. Scottish football really is nuts, isn't it?
It is mental. It's bizarre. All round, it's been a pretty spectacular season throughout in Scottish football, but I think summed up no more by the third best team in the country, lost to a junior side, sacked the manager, and you know, now we've ended up as the third best team. It's crazy. And hopefully we're on this upward trajectory now and we can leave that sort of shite behind us.
Yeah, let's leave that behind in this season. And hopefully next season is full of a lot more positives. It's certainly going to be a lot busier in terms of podcasts for us with these Sunday, Thursday turnarounds. So for those of you that do enjoy these live episodes, there will be probably a lot more of them to come. Maybe some even taking place in some far-flung departure hall. For those of us that are in attendance at games, he'll be sitting there in a dodgy Wi-Fi stream in an airport. But look, it's something that we've got to look forward to at least. But as I said, there wasn't really too much to review from what we saw at the weekend because it didn't really mean too much. We can be disappointed. We can be aggrieved at the performance that we saw. But I think now that we're doing this live on Wednesday, I think most of my anger has subsided and we look at the bigger picture. And so we'll take a look at the season as a whole, Callum, and the league campaign. We'll start there. Of course, it was going so well up until the World Cup break. And then we kind of fell off a cliff as such, and sitting 11 points behind Hearts, who had a game in hand against us. Who'd have thought come the end of the season we regained that third spot? So could you say in terms of our league performance, or certainly standing, it was job done, I guess?
It's sort of weird that we're sitting third and we're still questioning that, given sort of the way it went. I think, to be honest, the straight answer has to be yes in where we've ended up. It hasn't been as plain sailing as we'd have liked. We built up a good lead over Hearts whilst they were battling Europe. Then we proceeded to chuck it and I think give them an even larger lead. I can't quite remember. I believe it ended up being about 11 points. And then they sort of imploded, which obviously helped us, but you still wouldn't have put money on us actually being able to capitalise on it, would you? I think the fact that we did, it has to be, you know, sort of a big, well, I was going to say A+, that's maybe a bit strong. But we got what we wanted. I thought if Hearts finished third again this season, more European money, then we would probably struggle to bridge that gap quite a lot. Just with the way that they can improve on and off the park with two seasons of European funds. Whereas now it's going our way and hopefully we can, you know, do exactly what they didn't do, learn from their mistakes and build on it.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, this was, of course, the season that included that comical mid-season trip to Atlanta. I know we've got a few of the American subscribers tuning in. I've seen in the comments Mark and Noel, congratulations to your son for his victory in his tournament over the weekend. And I know you managed to get up to Atlanta to see the Dons when they came over in Europe. But for those of us certainly watching that mid-season friendly, it provided a lot of entertainment in terms of the commentary. And I know that There were certainly rumours that the trip was almost maybe treated as a little bit of a stag do, and maybe kind of had a little bit of an impact on the post form after returning. But yeah, I think maybe an A plus is a bit strong, Callum, in terms of league. I did agree that I saw a post on Facebook that we as a club should never be setting out our stall at the start of the season to finish third. We should have a better ambition as a club to be pushing on and to challenge as high as possible. Third should be the bare minimum. And there's nothing like doing the bare minimum the hard way as there is the Aberdeen way. But ultimately, we've finished in a position that we were made to rue not doing last season. And we saw the finances that Hearts benefited from this season for their European exploits. And we're going to benefit from that this season, hopefully. So I'm tempted to still kind of maybe sit on the like A minus side of things, because it was definitely an improvement, especially, you know, going to Pittodrie was much more enjoyable than it was last season.
Well, for the most part.
I mean, away from home wasn't the best still, so there's still room for improvement there.
Well, certainly for the sort of first 6 months of the season, it certainly improved under Barry, and you know, that's also where we should be. We should be turning up. Aberdeen turning up with their swagger and attitude, and well, the fuck you attitude, basically, and ruining everyone's day. That's what it's all about. And hopefully, we can carry on more of that. And you sort of get from Barry Robson, he's quite happy to take that on. So more of that would be absolutely excellent. I think, obviously, the Scottish Cup, as we mentioned, that takes a little bit of shine off our season. And I suppose perhaps the fashion in which we capitulated in the League Cup semi-final as well.
Yeah, and I think as well, the way we defended at the start of the season as well, we weren't solid. We were very easy to beat. We were very easy to score against. And I feared for us a lot of the times every time a team came forward. And that's definitely changed since the January transfer window as well. So we've seen improvement on and off the pitch. I suppose we could look at the managers, because once again, we've got two managers to review at the end of the season. Jim Goodwin, starting the campaign, and you know, fair play to Jim. He talks a good game, but he doesn't half fail to back it up. And if Dundee United fans didn't believe us, I bet they do now.
Oh, I know. And I've noticed he's still doing the sort of 7 to 9 minute long post-match interviews for the clubs as well. When you can compare that with Barry, where he just tries to get out there as soon as possible, ending with a lovely thank you. I mean, I bought into Jim Goodwin. I'll be honest, I did. When we appointed him, I was pretty happy. I thought, you know, he's done very well with St Mirren on their budget. It'll be interesting to see what he can do with ours. And I think it's fair to say it turned out to be too big a task for him. And he tried to do things, particularly play out from the back. That was the biggest problem when we just didn't have the players capable of doing so. Some of the signings, very, very questionable. And, I mean, remember how much he had to ship out when Stephen Glass, from Stephen Glass's signings, were almost in the same position. Again, having to, you know, get rid of the dead wood, which have only been here for about 9 months, whatever. So it's not a fantastic position to be in. I think that is something we need to look to improve on as well. And hopefully, we absolutely will. But I mean, the fact Jim Goodwin's been appointed by Dundee United for 2 years is also mental, because even if they get promoted in the first season, like, yeah, that's what they're all looking to aim for. But you look at Dundee United in the Championship, you'd be going, well, that's what he should be doing anyway. It was him that sort of ended up taking them down in the first place. And then if he fails, will he get another job at any point in Scottish football? Certainly not on a decent level. So bizarre, but I'm very, very happy with the man we've got in charge now. it's sort of a cliche, but he gets it. He buys into things. He knows what it's like being from here. He knows exactly what it's like, what you've got to deal with sometimes. And he's often very, very vocal about it. And I love it.
Yeah. And I think Noel kind of sums it up with Jim Goodwin said all the right things, extremely personable and engaging, which he absolutely was. And, you know, people were quite happy to go back into some of our videos when Jim was first appointed and pull up the fact that we were happy with the appointment. But as Noel says, I think he was in over his head and too stubborn to realise it and ask for help. And that was always the thing that kind of I felt that Jim's stubbornness was going to shoot himself in the foot. But as Johnny Main says, give me some of his confidence. You couldn't argue that Jim didn't believe what he was saying. Unfortunately, he was too quick to throw anybody under the bus at the first opportunity as well. I had a lot of questions around his man management style. And ultimately, that stubbornness and probably his own ego really didn't help, as well as probably what Noel says about the fact that he never asked for any help and just had the kind of confidence on his own ability. But again, come to pick up the point that you made, the fact that he brought in players that didn't necessarily suit the style that we had in terms of, you look at Anthony Stewart as a key example, you know, bringing him in as a key defender, initially making him club captain and asking him to play out from the back when we as fans were told by Wickham fans that is not his style. You know, he almost set Anthony Stewart up to fail in his time at Aberdeen, and Jim Goodwin, you could argue, set himself up for a failure. And ultimately, that's what I think his time here will be looked at as a failure. I think I saw Kaiser put in the comments that you could argue he's probably one of our worst managers in our history. And certainly that week at the start of this year is a contender for backing up that claim.
Yeah, absolutely. So sort of on Anthony Stewart, I probably don't expect him to be here next season. But the fact, you know, you're asking someone to come up here, he's never lived sort of out with the London area his whole life. So adjusting when you're in the complete opposite end of the country is already quite a big thing. And then all of a sudden, you're giving him the captain's arm, man. I think I seem to remember him himself said, I didn't expect that, which is never a good sign, really, is it? So that added pressure. And then, you know, playing a style that he doesn't suit, when there's clearly going to be lots of a backlog of footage that would already back that up. You don't need to see it in first person with your own eyes. So it was just, it was baffling. And it sort of summed, I feel like that just certainly perfectly summed up Jim Goodwin's tenure, just with that one player.
Yeah, and as Piss Drunk says, just shows you never choose a manager by looks. It's a very good point. And I'd actually forgotten about this as well. Don't forget the fact that when Jim Goodwin came in, we switched dugouts so that we could be next to the linesman on the main stand side as well. And he also changed where we warmed up pre-match as well. He had the team warming up in front of the red shed instead of at the RDS side, which we've reverted to on both instances. And not saying the two are connected, but just maybe didn't make a big difference as we thought it would, especially with the dugout side of things. So we'll see. We'll see how that pans out. I think it's fair to say that Jim Goodwin does get a big fat F for his time at Aberdeen.
Yeah.
Or do you go for
what?
What are you going to say?
F for fuck off. That's what I was going to say. I don't think there needs to really be much added to that. And you know what? Even talking about it all is just making me a little bit miserable again.
I thought you were going to say F for fucking atrocious. That's what I thought you were going to say. Although, could you give him a U? Is that, I think that's what I got for my higher maths, which meant unmarkable. Was that bad?
Don't you work in finance now? That's a concern.
Accounts. I've got a calculator. Come on.
All right, okay. Well, I suppose we could give him a U for unforgivable, unacceptable. I can't think of anything else for him to U. Unemployable, unless you're Dundee United.
Yeah, absolutely. His departure then sparked a lot of talk about who would come in and replace him. We had guys from Japan linked. We had obviously the usual Scottish suspects lined up as well. The media backing their usual favourites as well. But we stayed in-house on this one, with Barry Robson initially getting his second opportunity to manage the club on an interim basis before being made permanent manager just a few weeks ago. And I mean, we probably had our doubts on here when Barry took over, thinking he'll be only here for a few weeks till we get a more recognisable name. But there's been a couple of disappointing performances, mainly at Parkhead, but you can't argue with the job that Barry's done since coming in.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I remember myself specifically saying, I don't want him at some point. And, you know, happy for him to be an interim charge for as long as it needed to find the right man. But then he basically made it impossible to say he's not the right man just by consistently winning, improving our defence tenfold. We actually started taking clean sheets. We started winning away from home. It was a real shock to the system, but he basically made it. You know, he got that interview and basically gave no one else a chance by just taking it and running with it. And all credit has to go for him. I'd say that there is certain things that throughout his tenure so far that probably could be worked on. I absolutely agree in that. However, at the same time, he is still young and he will improve. And if he improves with us on what he's already done, delighted.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously you've got to maybe apportion some credit to Steve Agnew, and I think, but obviously that is on Barry as well, because it was Barry's decision to, you know, book a flight to Aberdeen for Steve before Steve had even accepted coming here. So he knew who he wanted in as his right-hand man, and he made that decision and pushed the boat out to get him up here. And I think the contrast in styles between Robson and Goodwin is hugely apparent. As you said, you know, it's very short, sharp, to the point from Barry. There's no 7 to 9 minute long interviews after the game. It gives the answers, you know, I'd maybe say we as fans expect to hear, you know, after a defeat, and full of praise for the fans, full of praise for the players in victory, and not quick to, you know, single out players for their mistakes. And, you know, I think in the game against Hibs, you know, he took responsibility for the performance and maybe not making the changes. There was certainly one of the games in the post split that I was impressed by the way Barry Robson took responsibility. But yeah, the way he came into the job and turned things around. There was a lot of talk about whether or not Jim Goodwin had lost the dressing room, but I think Barry's certainly a player you don't want to not put in the level of effort that was getting shown in the latter stages of Goodwin's tenure.
Oh, he will not fuck about. You sort of get that sense. He doesn't mess about with the media at all. He's not interested in charming them up, keeping them on side. He'll say what he's thinking. He says most of the time what we're thinking. And it seems to sort of be an extension of that, as well as also actually being a good manager who's got a lot of experience, not at, you know, first team level, but he's been in the coaching game for a good few years now, and certainly seems up to the task. And Piss Drunks mentioned something you never really hear about Robson, but have done with the last two managers. Wait until he can build his own squad. Plenty more to come from Robson. Sometimes, that does scare me a little bit, because it's been going so well with what it is. And the last time we said, wait till they get their own squad with Glass and Goodwin, they got their own squad and they were fucking awful. So let's just hope it's third time lucky, third time's a charm. And I fully believe in that to be the case.
But I think it's a good point that is made in that comment, because we'll have players that are coming in with a desire and want to play for the manager. I think we've seen that since January as well. And there's a real togetherness amongst the squad. The interview that came out on Red TV with Leighton Clarkson, sadly, didn't allude to him saying that he was definitely signing. But, you know, he mentioned that there's no bad eggs in the changing room. The squad are like a band of brothers, I think was the word he used. But there was a point from Noel as well about, you know, he thought it would be a lazy appointment. And I think that's a fair take that I'm sure a lot of Aberdeen fans had as well on the appointment of Barry Robson. It's certainly an opinion I probably shared along with Noel as well, that it probably was kind of like the easy option we were taking in terms of appointing Barry. And certainly the likes of Dave Cormack, we've given a lot of criticism to in terms of the previous two appointments, especially the Stephen Glass one about the whole recruitment process and whether or not it really was thorough and the due diligence was there. But, you know, he was called the outstanding candidate and results speak for themselves. And he's, you know, backed up and, you know, he does deserve the job. No bullshit, no waffle, as Johnny says. Simple, straight talking, and the results have come on the pitch. You know, we've got to be happy with the job done.
Yeah, can't argue with it. And he just, also, he's just a bit of a laugh. It seems like, I know I'm saying how he doesn't really play up to the media and try and be this media darling. His interviews are hilarious. You can tell he just doesn't want to be there, wants to get there as quick as possible. And sometimes then he starts saying stuff, a bit like my good self. I don't really know where he's going with it, but he just tries to just storm through it, no problem, and just get out of there as soon as possible. I love him. He seems a good lad, an extension by someone mentioned Kaiser said binds me sorting for 10 years, for 10 years now. Yep. And you know, not far from here, from Inverurie, he knows what it's about. And he knows what's expected by the fans as well, which is,
and I suppose,
Alan Burrows also sort of alluded to as well, which is misconstrued sometimes by the media.
I'm glad you can appreciate the fact that you waffle on sometimes with no idea of where you're going. It takes a brave man to admit that. But yeah, I think as well with the comment on the fact that he's been here for so long, is the fact that as well he spent a lot of time in the youth academy, and that's obviously a football philosophy, to use a buzzword that I know gets branded around a lot, and certainly a key strategy that the board are keen to use in terms of developing players. So Barry's got a lot of experience in time spent with the development squad, the under 18 squad, so should have a good understanding of the players coming through and knowing when to bleed them into the first team, and we could maybe see more of that next season. Obviously, on the last slide, we were discussing the likes of Jack Milne. Blair McKenzie signed a new deal for next season. Mason Hancock was also out on loan as well. So there's lots of youngsters on the fringes of the first team. Ryan Duncan's obviously been getting more minutes as the season came to a close. Let's see how much more of them feature next season. But what would you give Barry Robson? I think you mentioned A-plus for the league. I think it's hard to argue around an A-plus for Barry.
No, there's nothing else really he could have done to improve. You know, we beat Rangers at Ibrox. He improved our away form in the game at St Mirren with the Roscoe red card. You probably thought we would have won that and gone on to finish third even more comfortably. Had that not been the case, can't knock it. Absolutely can't knock it. He's been brilliant since he's come in, and long may it continue. A+ from me for amazing plus.
Good. One point I wanted to pick up on before we go into the cups was from Kaiser. He made it earlier in the show. Was the fact that our average crowd this season was over 17,000. Which is up 3,000 from last season. The average crowd was at 14,000. So we've had a lot more in through the gate this season. And I think we mentioned it towards the back end of the last episode with the fact that, you know, there's a better connection with this squad to the paying public, and we can be so much more feared in terms of when the fans really are with. But of course, that figures as well. We've got to remember there were a few games last season that were still affected by restricted crowds as well. So slightly skewed on the averages, but regardless, going in the right direction. And of course, Alan Burrows is staying on top of that season ticket counter. And good to see that coming up ahead of moving day for those that are maybe wanting to move their current season ticket, we're sitting with over 8,000 season tickets just now. Will this be the season that we finally reach the 10,000 season ticket mark?
You'd think so. Possibly people also maybe letting European football be the deciding factor as well, because people will absolutely want to snap up season tickets, give them a chance to get tickets for the European games. Certainly moving in the right direction. I think crowds will probably only get better. The atmosphere only going to get better next season with more people being allowed in the red shed, basically, which is fantastic news. Generate the atmosphere and more bodies through the door, more revenue as well for the club to keep on improving and pushing in the right direction and getting towards that top 100 club mark.
Yeah, whatever the fuck that means, I still don't understand it. Right, moving on to cup competitions. We'll keep this one brief. Scottish Cup. If Jim Goodwin's not getting a U, our Scottish Cup performance is definitely getting a U. Agreed?
Couldn't get myself off mute. Yeah, shite. Absolute shite.
Cool. We'll move on. We don't need to delve back into that any further. Hopefully, next season we get a better run at that. League Cup. Semi-final defeat to Rangers after extra time. Johnny put in a comment earlier to go back to some of the comments that came in earlier. Flatter to deceive in the League Cup as we didn't meet a challenge until the semi-final. Probably fair. And then, you know, performances don't win cups, as he said on the podcast when he came on to speak about that defeat. You know, we played well, but unfortunately we didn't win anything from playing well, and we didn't get to the final. So how do you rate our League Cup campaign?
Well, we got to Hampden in that competition, so that was a bonus. But that's not the end goal. I was pretty happy, you know, until the capitulation against Rangers. I thought, you know, it was still a good opportunity because they haven't been fantastic throughout all season to get ourselves to the final, give us a chance of winning some silverware. I suppose an improvement, at least. And, you know, we didn't concede a goal throughout the whole group stages, guys. Don't forget that. Yeah. It was better. I would probably agree with things I can't find. It was a C. It was a C. B if we got to the final and lost. A if we'd won it.
Yeah, and as Mark said, of course, let's not forget our captain selling us out of the cup. I mean, as I've said countless times, he could have at least really hurt Sakala on that to make it worthwhile not have him at least continue. But yeah, it was one of them that it's all well and good getting to a semi-final with the run that we had but and then playing well. But if you don't win the semi-final, it means nothing. The day out was okay, I guess. Transfers then, how would you assess our transfers as a whole? We've had some key signings, albeit most of them been on loan outside of Duke and Miowski, but we've also had a couple of horrors that haven't really worked out as well as we'd hoped.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one because I think if you look at the impact of our key signings, that probably boosts the grade up a little bit, but not to forget the absolute stinkers we had. You know, Anthony Stewart didn't work out. Jaden Richardson was an expensive outlay and has barely featured since Brian Robson's come in. Shaden Morris, likewise. Kyle Roberts has been on the medical table the whole time. And in overall intents and purposes, seems to be off, really. A lot of talk about him going to Chesterfield, perhaps, which I think are still National League, but correct, I'm not certain. And the fact we spent money on that him as well, I think I would go C again, probably, because just for all the stinkers, essentially. And if there was one or two less stinkers in there, then it would maybe be I'd be maybe heading towards an aid, given the likes of Duke, Ramadani, Miowski have all been fantastic. So, I think a C. Lots of room for improvement.
Yeah, I was kind of leaning more to around about the B mark, but probably B minus, because, again, as Things I Can't Find says, a real mixed bag, very good players come in mixed with some of the worst I've ever seen. And I think had we not seen the additions of Matty Pollock, Angus McDonald in the January transfer window, I'd have probably been kind of agreeing with the C. But those additions in January really kind of helped propel us to arguably where we ended up finishing the league, because without them, our defence would have been, I hate to think what that would have been like for the back end of the season. And yeah, obviously Graham Shinney as well coming back then as well. You've got to put him down in there as well. So yeah, some definite bomb scares, some definite players we're probably not going to see again next season, but definitely some diamonds that were found in the rough as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the Angus McDonald one in particular, you know, he's probably gone slightly a bit more under the radar than Matty Pollock has. But the fact he was just sort of at Swindon, just kind of chilling. They didn't think all that much of him. And I don't know how it sort of came about that we were going to take him, to be honest. Because I think he ended up getting released by Swindon so we could take him for free.
Yeah, he told the Swindon fans to fuck off and got dropped. And then he comes up here.
Yeah, and performed excellently, as I say, but maybe a bit understated given how well Pollock's done. And of course, McDonald then being tied up for another 2 years, an absolute bonus. And, you know, just for that photo alone with his sunglasses on after the St Mirren game, you know, he'll do for me, Bonnie lad. And he is a Bonnie lad.
He is a very Bonnie lad. There's a lot of Bonnie lads in this team. Right, we'll look back at our favourite moments from the season and also our worst moments of the season. We'll start with the worst moment because, again, I think it's fairly straightforward with that one. Worst moment of the season for you, Callum?
Wasn't even there, but Darvel. I mean, also, it is a toss-up between that and then the 5-0 against Hearts, because I had gone to the game against Hearts. And I think that might have taken the cake just because I was there if I had to go back to Aberdeen instead of Kirkcaldy. However, not the case. So Darvel, I mean, it's our worst result, really.
It's definitely there. But I was thinking about this driving home from work today and thinking, well, it's going to be a fairly short segment if we both say that. But I was going to say more the fact that Jim Goodwin got the next two games after that was probably the worst moment. The fact that he was even allowed back in Aberdeen after losing that game, let alone seeing us overseeing that 5-0 game and then the decision to even give him the 6-0 game, that statement pre-Hibs, the whole week is probably the worst moment of the season. But yeah, started off with Darvel, of course. So hopefully none of them cup upsets to look forward to next season.
But people mention them more in the comments.
But oddly though, from our own point of view, that was probably the best moment of the season because it was one of our most popular episodes in terms of lives. I think we had over 300 folks subscribe to the channel in that 24-hour period, and it's been part of why our podcast has grown a lot since January. So in a weird sort of way, we've got to thank Jim Goodwin for being a total knob and chucking us out the cup to Darvel.
Yeah, for that and only that, I'll be eternally grateful for Jim Goodwin from a selfish point of view. I suppose we probably wouldn't have ended up, you know, if we'd got through that, you know, we might have ended up sticking with him and then probably still wouldn't have finished third, I suppose. There's upsides, I guess.
Yeah, I like Lee Seymour saying, surely seeing Jim Goodwin walking across the Easter Road pitch and leaving the job the way he did. No, I think that's funny, to be honest. It's the way that all ended. Sad for him in a way, but the manner in which he left was certainly funny. Yeah. Right, on to more happier notes then. Favourite moment of the season, Callum?
It's a tough one. It's a very, very tough one. And I think Duke at Tannadice would be up there for a lot of people. And it certainly would be if I was there. However, I wasn't. But I still got to run through the streets of Glasgow after being on a sub crawl in a particularly staunch Rangers area yelling Duke. So that was pretty good. I would say probably for me, just because it was mental, And, you know, it sort of helped us kick on and think, oh, fucking hell, we could do this. Scales go against Rangers specifically, just because, you know, how mental it was when it came about, the fact it was flying over Alan McGregor's head, and it felt like, oh, shit, we could really, really go on and finish third here. I think that's got to be up there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I thought you were maybe going to go down the route of Duke at County away because of the day out and how mental that was. I think Duke at Tannadice, you're right, is up there. I didn't really have you putting down that game as your favourite moment of the season. I think for me, in that game specifically, it would probably been the Bojan goal because I just didn't see how Rangers were scoring twice. I know, obviously, we know what happened in around Christmas time, but I felt a lot more confident on that occasion when Bojan scored. But I think for me, the favourite moment for a season, there's a lot of little tidbits in there. Ramadani's goal against Hibs in front of the Red Shed was definitely up there for me. But I think as someone that enjoys the football so much, from, you know, being with our friends to the emotional side of it as well, probably that full-time whistle against the Mirren, knowing that we'd secured third and secured European football, and just seeing the atmosphere inside the stadium that day as well, because as you mentioned on the episode last time out as well, the fact that the South Stand were fairly getting going in terms of their backing of the team that day as well, and, you know, the stadium having over 16,500 Aberdeen fans that day as well. So for me, that probably that St Mirren game was the favourite part of the season for me, and just how ecstatic everybody was come full time, and seeing, you know, I remember as a kid going to Pittodrie, and the game that always sticks out for me was when we beat Rangers. I'm sure it was 2-0 to secure European football under Jimmy Calderwood. And I'll always remember that, and the fact that my dad was like grabbing my jacket so I didn't end up on the pitch that day. And just, again, you know, that almost that Wednesday night brought back kind of that emotions and memories of what it was like seeing the Dons qualify for Europe, and what it's going to mean for a lot of fans next season as well.
Is that Severn and Lovell game, I think? Yeah. Yeah. I remember I wasn't actually there, but I watched a compilation, basically the highlights, just the goals from that game with, I think it was a cover of Heroes by David Bowie over it many a time. So I think it's weird that there's so many up moments, like good moments that we could pick from.
From a season that's...
Yeah, we were so shit for a lot of them off the season. Another one on a more personal note for us, Glenn, Duke saying he'd seen the videos.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. Yeah, and probably, well, even after the game on Wednesday, with the work that Lynn did in letting us meet Leighton and Duke, and the fact that Leighton also watches the videos, well, certainly his family does, and passes on the comments to him. And I know he's watched a few of them as well. And you guys are taller in real life, but yeah, no, that's been pretty cool as well. The fact that we know there's folk at the club that watch, maybe not the best thing when we lose so badly, but yeah, no, look, there's been a lot of favourite moments for us in terms of this show as well, this season as well. Of course, all of you that tune into these episodes that we're doing live on the YouTube channel, whether you like our videos, whether you comment on the videos after they're pre-recorded, or if you're commenting along with us during the lives, if you've ever shared an episode, recommended an episode to a friend and helped spread the word. As Callum keeps saying, we're just two idiots that chat nonsense about football, mainly Aberdeen, and like we would be down the pub. And the fact that we've, you know, grown this into over 1,000 of you listen every week and similar numbers watch is quite mind-blowing. On a personal note as well, probably seeing this show grow as well has been up there, and that's not, you know, lost on us, that we owe a lot to those of you that tune in. A big thanks as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fact, you know, there's 40-odd people in here right now choosing to spend their Wednesday night listening to us chat shite. It's quite something. So thank you very much to everyone. And it's also led to like some pretty cool stuff for us as well. So we wouldn't be here without you. Like, for example, getting the interview with Joey Harper.
Christian Ramirez.
Joey Harper in particular, my dad's absolute hero, managed to go and get him to sign a top for my dad to give him for his Christmas. Just absolutely lovely. And we probably wouldn't be able to do it without any of you guys. And people say that all the time, but I do appreciate it, regardless of how weird I am when you meet me in person.
Yeah, you're definitely not the more sociable of the two of us, but look, we enjoy the feedback, whether it's negative, whether it's positive, because look, everybody's got their own opinion in terms of football in general, and not everybody's going to agree with what we say. We fully accept that. And as I said, we just got bored in lockdown and wanted to chat about football when we couldn't chat to anybody else, and have made that into something ridiculous that loads of people enjoy. So as we said, yeah, just thanks for your continued support. And hopefully we can continue to strengthen the show next season. But Callum, the club also needs to strengthen next season.
Oh, well, Glenn, you're getting fucking good at this, mate.
I know, right? Sign me up, Sky Sports. I would be better if I actually got the banner on properly, but I need to hide this one. Right, where do we need to strengthen next season?
Right. Oh God. I think a lot of places. We're obviously waiting on the confirmation of European football, which I think will be a big part in not only attraction we have, but also the budget we're available and how much we'll be able to improve. Still not announced Nicky Devlin. That's odd, isn't it? And waiting Clarkson. Keep as many of the loanies as possible would be where I'd start.
You know, I actually did wonder if tonight would be the night that the club did a 1903 announcement, because they knew we were going to be live earlier than usual.
I'd be fuming.
I really hope they did it just for the shithousery part of that. But no, I agree. Strength and depth is definitely key for next season. You know, there's been a lot of talk around, not in terms of us wanting to sign him, but I saw Dylan Levitt's name getting mentioned. Of course, you retweeted that poll. I think it was Connor Douglas that did that about signing him. And a lot of us saying, well, we want Leighton Clarkson back first and foremost. But I do agree on that sense. We do need strength and depth across most areas. It feels weird with the amount of wingers we've still got on our books. But I would like to see an out-and-out winger brought into the squad. And even with the signing of Nicky Devlin, am I really happy with Jaden Richardson as being the backup to that next season? Based on what we've seen this season, probably not. Definitely feel that maybe need another left back, what Mark Munn says as well, because of course, again, that depends on the future of Liam Scales. Jack McKenzie's performance is certainly towards the back end of this season, maybe left a lot to be desired, a bit of improvement needed there. But I think as well, another centre forward, as Mark says, and two in the midfield. I'm wondering, Mark, if you're also including as part of that two centre midfields somebody on top of Graham Shinney returning, if he does. We've spoken about this as well before. Would you like to see us go for Big Van Veen at well, as Michael Taylor says? See, breaking the scoring record feels like a bit of a no-brainer compared to Marley Watkins, but two different types of players.
I would absolutely love Kevin Van Veen. I know he's not of that model of, you know, taking in a young player, developing him for a few years, selling them on for a profit. I know it would cost us a fair bit of money. I just think, in addition to Duke, and we obviously, when we're going to be competing on four fronts, let's not forget, there should be more games in the Scottish Cup, you'd like to think. Ideally, one more game in the League Cup than we had this season, and at least eight games in Europe, potentially. It's a lot more football, and I think you see how, you know, how much we miss either one of Duke and Miowski when one of them isn't there. God forbid we were ever in the situation that they were both missing. So another striker, And Van Veen, I know it's a bit of a, well, in Dutch critics made apparently one of the things I can't find. And, you know, it has been a little of a purple patch, but I think it is clear to see he can do it at this level. Imagine if he had the service that, you know, and we could potentially provide as well. If not him, I still think another striker is absolutely necessary. I think a first choice left back or left wing back, depending on how we're going to be playing, is essential, because Johnny Hayes is old and Jack McKenzie has not looked particularly up for it. I don't think he was good against Celtic. Obviously, didn't see the full game. Of course, there is Kieran Ngwenya and Mason Hancock potentially returning as well. So I don't know what's going to go with them. But I think at least a left back, a striker, but I would probably agree two centre mids, even if we keep Clarkson and Shinney. Perhaps one in a more offensive role and then one as the more defensive midfielder and centre-backs as well, because I don't think we're keeping Pollock, which is pretty sad, isn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think, well, Mark also suggests Thierry Small from St Mirren at left-back, but I feel he's a bit of a bomb scare, is it not? Is it Scott Tanzer, who was in the team before him? I would be looking at him, but in terms of St Mirren defenders, I'd also be looking at Ryan Strain. I know, obviously, mm-hmm. we're signing Nicky Devlin at right back, but if Ryan Strain could switch sides and play left back, I'd happily take him for that. And then Lee Seymour picking up on a rumour that was doing the rounds as well about Everton potentially preparing a £10 million bid for Duke, as they've certainly had scouts up watching him. I mean, if the starting bid is £10 million, I'd be happy to enter discussions and we can start a bidding war from there onwards. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of work being done in terms of left back. Kaiser picks up on Mason Hancock, who of course played in the League Cup group stages at the start of this season, and I agree, I thought he was good, of course, mm-hmm. just working his way back from quite a serious injury, so he's almost got to start all over again in terms of his Aberdeen career and prove his worth. But again, going back to that point I made earlier about Barry Robson in terms of his time spent at Aberdeen as a whole, Barry will be well vested in terms of the knowledge on Mason Hancock and know how well a player he is and how he could potentially fit into his plans.
Absolutely. I'm just excited about transfers. I just love it all. I love it all. And I'm really wanting us to just get on the way by announcing Nicky Devlin. And then hopefully after we find out our European fate, things can start to roll in and pull together. But of course, we'll be granted a little bit more time, providing Celtic win the cup before the start of our season, which is more than welcome. And should hopefully, as much as I'm eager and excited to see signings, mean there's less duds because we won't be as rushed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, of course, the club announcing the pre-season friendlies that have been released so far, I'm sure, after the weekend, Scottish Cup will maybe be in a position to announce more, because, of course, that will affect when our season does officially start in terms of European football. But there is, in terms of domestic, we've got local trips to Fraserburgh and Turriff United, and will be the first trip up to the Bellesley in over 13 years for the Dons, and a wee away day down to London for any London-based Dons tuning in. It's a trip to Charlton on the week before the league season starts, and the Dons also heading off to Portugal for a week of pre-season training. Mm-hmm. One player in terms of centre-back, just before we move on to the next part, a few of you are commenting on just now is Michael Rose, released from Coventry, a boyhood dandy, and, you know, in an interview with a Press and Journal announced that he wouldn't be opposed to a return to the Dons at some point in his career, but probably a bit too soon, maybe like Jack Grimmer as well, where he probably still fancies a few more years down in England before making the move back up to Scotland. But I'm sure maybe one we're potentially exploring.
You would think so. Yeah, you'd actually think so. Would fit into the homegrown quota, which we'll need to meet for Europe as well. And certainly he's done very well for himself after leaving Pittodrie. I do agree in that perhaps he'll maybe fancy himself to stay down in England for another couple of years, boost that bank balance, because teams are obviously going to be able to offer more money than us. However, the draw for him in particular would be European football at Pittodrie for your boyhood club. You know, after things didn't quite work out in the first place, he's probably got a point to prove as well, perhaps a bit of a chip on his shoulder, and that could potentially work in our favour, oddly.
Yeah, potentially. And of course, he'll be coming to a new and improved Pittodrie, as today it was announced that there will be three sides worth of LED advertising placed around Pittodrie, as well as two electronic scoreboards to display the score. And I think one of them is going to be used for the score and one of them is going to be used for the match clock as well. So I think it's one of the final deals that Rob Wicks did, and it was something that he was telling me all about at the Gothenburg dinner, but just don't put it out yet until it's official. So, you know, stuck to my word on that for Rob. And I think there's still a few more exciting plans to be announced on the back of that as well. So looking forward to seeing what comes out in terms of the improvements off the pitch that the club have planned between now and the start of next season as well. So good bit of commercial business that we've managed to get over the line.
Absolutely. I mean, you didn't even tell me. So Glenn can be trusted with information, Aberdeen Football Club, if you're listening.
Not just a thing.
Just so you know. It brings Pittodrie a bit more into the modern day football, I suppose. Make for a better match experience, and it'll be great when, you know, up on the scoreboard is Aberdeen 3 Rangers 0. So that'll make for a good photo too.
Yeah, perfect. Look forward to that. Right, to round off the episode then, hopes for next season. As I said, we'll probably expand on this part more over the summer when we come back after a short break to kind of look at transfer activity and look towards the fixtures and what else we've got to look forward to over the summer. But just now, Callum, what would be your hopes going into next season?
A trophy, Scottish Cup or League Cup, don't care. I would love to see us win the Scottish Cup in my lifetime. Well, not necessarily my lifetime. I feel like that's quite plausible. But whilst my dad's still here, he's getting about 68 years old now. I'd love to see us win the Scottish Cup with him around. But if it was to be the League Cup again, I would be delighted. I'd be able to probably soak it in a little bit more, because I think when I was like 14 and I won the League Cup, I just thought, fucking hell, it's going to be like this all the time now. And I didn't quite appreciate it for what it was. So I'd like to see us take some silverware back to AB24. And as much as I'd like to see us, you know, win the league, I feel like it's quite unrealistic at this point. But sealing European group stage football again would be excellent. And hopefully at least closing the gap and, you know, making things a bit more competitive between us and the big two, as well as, you know, sort of standing on the heads of Hearts and Hibs and climbing even further away from them. That would be perfect.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think third has to be the minimum for the league next season, but agreed, hopefully we can close the gap to the top two a little bit. Obviously, we're in a bit better position than we were last summer in terms of potential finances coming in. Of course, that'll be a bit more confirmed after the weekend as well. I'm surprised that when you said you want to see us win a trophy, you didn't go straight for the Europa League, knowing how optimistic you tend to be on these things. But I agree, I'd love to see us win the Scottish Cup as well. That's definitely the one that I want to see win in my lifetime as well, as you say. And, you know, you just look at some of the pictures that come out of teams. I know playoffs is a bit different, but seeing team, you know, people there like father and son and all their friends enjoying that moment. I was kind of the same as you back in when we won the League Cup. It was a moment maybe I didn't really appreciate at the time. But yeah, definitely a trophy would be absolutely ideal. And, you know, actually, if we could...
Give me this. Europa League finals in Dublin next year. Give me this.
Yeah, the Aviva. Although I didn't actually rate the Aviva as a stadium when I was there last summer, but that was probably just because Scotland were absolutely shite. But happily go to Dublin for another party. Got a good record in being really drunk in Dublin. Mm-hmm. But, you know, even if we could actually progress out of the groups in Europe, or if we get to the groups, a couple of wins on the European stage, just not embarrass ourselves like Rangers do in, when they get to the group stages, that would be an achievement in itself for us. And I guess continue to strengthen on the pitch as well. Mm-hmm. In terms of recruitment, find a few more of those Dukes and Miovskis out there, and hopefully retain some of those players that we had at the back end of last season to give us that good nucleus of a squad, so we're not almost kind of starting from scratch again. Mm-hmm. And building that team spirit. But look, there's lots to be positive about going into next season for a change, lots to be excited about, lots of trips to plan as well, and we'll be here to cover it all.
Absolutely. And I'm very, very excited already for the new season. I'm missing football already. So we will be absolutely be covering things. Anything that happens, we'll be desperate to talk about it, I'm sure. So, but thank you again for anyone who's actually willing to listen. We appreciate it a lot. I know we said that earlier, but I just thought I'd really hammer it home. And thanks for everyone that left some nice comments as well. I know Johnny and Noel, you know, as sort of absent fans, I guess you could say, saying how much they appreciate it. Thank you very much for anyone who's leaving kind words. It's much appreciated. And, you know, builds my ego a little bit.
Yeah, and especially Johnny for his help in stepping in on the podcast this season and knowing what it's like to be on the other side of the mic. Mm-hmm. As well. So do appreciate all the you that have tuned in and but also helped out the podcast in terms of coming on and giving your 20p worth as well. It's really appreciated. But I guess from us, as I said, thank you very much for tuning in to another live episode tonight on the Red Tinted Glasses YouTube channel. If you are watching live tonight and haven't left a like on the video, please do so as well. It really helps us grow the channel continuously. And if you're listening on audio as well, remember to hit that subscribe button and get the notifications on. So for when episodes do go out over the summer, you are well informed, because most likely we'll be doing live episodes to try and react to maybe signing news or mm-hmm. any fixture announcements that come out as well. Maybe try and do a wee preview show of the you know, European draws as well. I know that'll be after the league season starts, but we'll be still with you over the summer, maybe a bit sporadically, and hopefully some of the players respond to our DMs and don't leave us unread, and we'll have a couple of interviews over the summer as well. But yeah, thank you all for your support this season, and we'll see you over the summer. If not, we'll see you next season. So come on, you Reds!
Sports Social Podcast Network.